Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lilydale Radio, featuring topics about spiritualism, mediumship, healing, spirituality, and the Lilydale Assembly, the world's largest center for the religion, philosophy, and science of spiritualism. This is Lilydale Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Wednesdays with Willa. I am your host, Willa White, and you are listening to Lilydale Radio. This is my radio show where you can come and chat with me and my special guests on various topics. And we're very fortunate today to have with us Tom Crapsley. So thank you for being here today, Tom.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
We're going to have a great discussion about Andrew Jackson Davis. You're going to know who he is by the end of the show and be able to take some knowledge with you and use it. So I want to give people a few housekeeping things to begin with. If you want to call into the show and ask Tom or me questions about Andrew Jackson Davis, you can use the call-in number, which is 818-739-8818. Again, 818-739-8818. There are two ways to listen to the show. One is through blogtalkradio.com/LilydaleRadio, and we've got four shows you can tune into throughout the week. And the other way is on my Facebook page, which is Willa White Medium, and you can like and share and follow and all that good stuff and know when I'm going live with my next show or next thing I want to share with all of you. So you can also find me on my website, which is willawhite.com. So hello, everyone, as you're coming on board. We appreciate you listening today. So as I said, our topic today is Andrew Jackson Davis, and we have Tom Crapsley here, who is a resident of Lilydale. How about you tell them a little bit about yourself, Tom, so they have a sense of who you are?
Well, yeah, I think the best way to start is to talk about my introduction to spiritualism, and that began in 1968. It was a long time ago, and at that time, I was a member of a metaphysical coffee clutch at the University of Buffalo, and the subject of Lilydale came up, and it was going to be a road trip, of course.
Of course.
So we came from Buffalo up here and on a sunny July afternoon, and we all got introduced to spiritualism, and what really brought me here and inspired me the most was the Healing Temple. And So within short order, within a couple of years, I started coming every summer and eventually serving in the Healing Temple every summer. And I also, as luck would have it, I also discovered that there was a spiritualist church in my neighborhood while I was in college, and I spent some time there going to classes, studying with Reverend Wendling.
Oh, yeah.
Ada Sandy Wendling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Reverend Wendling had interesting history too, because she studied with Arthur Conan Doyle as a child.
Which is incredible, yeah. Amazing, and special.
Yes, very special, because Arthur Conan Doyle was certainly one of the great researchers in the paranormal field altogether, but also a very much committed to spiritualism as a philosophy.
He wrote the history of spiritualism, just the Sherlock Holmes stories.
Right, right. So anyway, so that's part of the lineage that I was fortunate enough to be part of.
Right.
And then, of course, meeting many of the people who were instrumental to me. Actually, as we were talking with you earlier in this very house,
mm-hmm.
Before probably you were ever knew about Lilydale, I used to come and sit in circles here and learned a great deal from those experiences. Yeah. So and so it was just continually learning about predominantly the healing, and then I think it was in the early 70s, Reverend Ann Gaiman mm-hmm. introduced me to Andrew Jackson Davis. She handed me a book, and she said, you might be interested in this. And I was more than interested.
Yeah.
Once I started to read, I said, this is what it's really about for
mm-hmm.
me, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it was the depth of philosophy, which I was looking for.
Yes.
I needed more than just the phenomena. I needed the understanding behind it.
Yes.
Right? And
the spiritual underpinnings.
Exactly. That's what I needed. And I found that in spades in Davis, more than just for spiritualism, but for, you know, for cosmology in general, if you will.
Yes.
Yeah. To having an understanding of how our universe works,
mm-hmm.
not just physically, but physically and spiritually.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that Davis brought to the table. And it's amazing that has been kind of forgotten. Not just by spiritualists, and that's certainly not just by spirit, but forgotten by the culture in general,
mm-hmm.
because he's the first person to bring together the discoveries of science with spirituality. That had really never been done before.
Well, Emanuel Swedenborg had done that, and other
not
other
to the degree that
right.
Davis
did.
Right,
he did
yeah.
a lot. But I think there were definitely people that broke ground before him.
Yeah.
But there was certainly.
But he
did more. So.
Yeah, I think he did more. For instance, you know, in Nature's Divine Revelation, which was his first published work. And that book was done in a full trance state, and it was.
We should back up and explain a little bit about Andrew Jackson and what year was he born? Do you remember?
1826.
And he was how old when he first?
He was 17. He was age 17. He grew up in dirt poor circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
His father was alcoholic.
Right.
His mother was supportive of him. But you know, and she was uneducated. She had something of a spiritual bent to her, but it was very, very conventional.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing that Davis, he was always aware of his circumstances, you know, acutely so, even as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You see that in his first autobiography, which he wrote when he was like 28 years old,
mm-hmm.
like a 500-page book. Anyway, at age 17, he became interested in mesmerism.
Mm-hmm. Which was really taking off during that time.
Yes, it was very popular, at least in the Northeast. So he became curious and interested in it. As luck would have it, a traveling mesmerist was in his community at the time, in the Poughkeepsie area. That's what he's known as, the Poughkeepsie Seer. So he set up a date, and it took about three times for the mesmeric passes to actually put him in another state.
Okay.
And mesmerism, interesting, when it first came about, was a healing modality.
Yeah, that's
right?
What I read.
It was a healing modality, and it looked very similar to some of the healing modalities today,
mm-hmm.
energetic healing modalities,
yeah.
hand passes around the subject
mm-hmm.
For up to 45 minutes, if they say, you know, that,
yes.
which is a lot more than people tend to do it today.
That's true. It's an abbreviated version, especially with church style.
Exactly, exactly. So up to 45 minutes, and on occasion people would go into trance states, sometimes very deep trance states. Well, on the third time, Davis went into a deep trance state, and it was discovered that he was capable of doing medical clairvoyance.
Right.
That he would diagnose and prescribe for illnesses, and diagnose giving precise medical terminology.
Which he could not have known because he was illiterate.
Yeah, exactly. He was illiterate. And his operator, as they were called in those days, he and his operator decided they were going to do this for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the next 2.5 years on a daily basis, that's what they did.
And accurately.
And very accurately. And about a year and a half or so into it, he was also given the guidance that he should assemble a group of people in New York City
mm-hmm.
for a series of lectures, mm-hmm. trance lectures.
Right.
So they got some illiterati from New York. They assembled a group of people. One of whom was a relative of the Bush presidents.
Oh, long ago.
And he was a professor. He was a professor of Hebrew.
Oh, fun.
In New York, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so he was there at these lectures. And these lectures went on for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they provided a new cosmology.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was bringing together the discoveries of science with philosophy and spirituality, in a way that had never been done before. If this wasn't even done to this degree by Swedenborg or others, because he got into the very specific detail of things like the surfaces of the planets in the solar system,
yeah,
right? Some of which was actually a good deal of which was verified later by space probes,
mm-hmm,
150 years later.
Right.
You know, so he also discussed two planets that hadn't even been discovered, Neptune and Pluto.
And he knew about them because he was able to connect.
Yes.
With those spirit guides and teachers. Last week we had Judith Rochester,
yeah,
on, and
yeah,
we were talking about the role of spirit guides and teachers that they can play. And in Andrew Jackson's early history, that was important for him to be able to
yes,
channel those,
yeah,
of
particularly,
higher mind.
Yeah. Yes. Particularly, I think that was particularly important for him in his psychological development.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was under a lot of strain, of course, you
yeah,
imagine.
It's physically,
you know,
draining,
yeah,
to be on in those kinds of ways.
Yeah. And especially when you're breaking convention.
Yeah, people don't always like that.
Exactly.
But I think, it's important, as you keep emphasizing,
yeah,
in our conversation, that he combines the science with the philosophy and
yeah,
the spirituality, because a lot of religions is mainly based on faith.
Mm-hmm.
And the book that they can read and
right,
refer to as a reference manual, so to speak. And with this, it's a combination of factors, and
right,
that's what spiritualism is built upon: the idea of the philosophy, the religion, and the science of spiritualism.
Right.
So you have those as combining factors.
And one of the things I like to say, and sort of and Davis would be right behind this too, is that we are not a faith-based religion; we're an experience-based
yeah,
religion. You know, so it's our internal experience that allows us to have a sense of deeper understanding of who we are on a broader scale.
Yeah.
So our experience with, as you said, spirit guides, our experience with other levels of consciousness.
And personal experience.
Yes.
I think that was, as far as the birth of modern spiritualism, the idea
yeah,
of you can have personal experiences, not
yeah,
just someone else dictating
exactly,
to you,
yes,
but you will have a personal experience with spirit and allow the divine to guide you in your life.
Right.
And that's an important message of spiritualism throughout all these
yes,
years.
Right. And that's that, to me, it's the egalitarian notion, you know,
yes,
non-hierarchical.
Yes.
It's non-hierarchical.
There's no middleman.
Yeah. Everybody's got access.
Yes.
You know. And, again, you see this over and over again in Davis's writings. He talks about it,
yeah,
and encourages,
mm-hmm,
people to utilize their own access and actually dedicate themselves to it,
mm-hmm,
dedicate themselves to their own progress. So anyway, this first book was compiled. These were full trance lectures,
mm-hmm,
so he was not conscious of it. And they this was all compiled in the first book, which was called Nature's Divine Revelation, A Message to Mankind.
Take note of the title, folks.
Yeah. And that was published in 1847, a year before the Fox Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that it was instrumental in creating a way of thinking, or supporting a way of thinking, that allowed the Fox Sister phenomena to have context.
Yes. Yeah.
Better context.
Better context.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was going on.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and I think it was very, very important. But also, I also tell a lot of people this: it was absolutely essential that it came through women.
Mm. And tell them why you say that.
Why do I say that?
Yeah.
Because, and even Davis will talk about how women have been. The great sin of humanity was that half of humankind was in chains. meaning women.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Right. And so this was the great story was that it was coming through women. It was like saying, look, it's time. It's time for the feminine to be reintegrated into society and to be fully utilized and appreciated. So that's another aside, but I think it's important.
It is important, and the idea that during that time in Victorian times, women didn't have the right or ability to speak in public.
That's right.
Unless they were mediums. I mean, you can go and do a church lecture if you were a woman, but if you were a medium, you could.
Right.
And you could speak.
Well, it helped to break, it broke the ice on that, and women started to say, you know, if I can do this, I can do that, too. You know,
yes,
like,
yes.
You know, what's this?
Yes, definitely an important part of it.
Yeah.
Let's talk more about the scientific parts of things
that
Davis was bringing forth, and then I think we should probably take a caller.
Okay, if we have some callers, So, there's so many levels that he worked on, and certainly evolution was a big part of his I don't know, theoretical constructs, if you will, because he really, years before Darwin, a number of years before Darwin, he had pretty much the same thing, and I think it might have been, you know, generally understood then that there was a progress in life from, let's say, mineral to single cell to plant, animal, et cetera, and the ladder of the species, if you will.
Sure.
But what, and Davis had that all mapped out and drawn up in some of his books, but what Davis had that was different from Darwin was that it was all purposeful. But there was an underlying...
A divine purpose.
There's an underlying intelligence and purpose behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And not intelligent design, by the way. Much more dynamic than that.
Okay.
That evolution is an ongoing process and actually an aspect of the nature of the Creator.
Yes.
That's different, you know, from intelligent design saying, you know, there's some wise guy up there and he's got it all... you know, drawn out. No, it's dynamic. It's in process. It's underway all the time.
Well, when you think about, let's say, the symbol of a garden, you can try to prune that thing and control it as much as you want, but if you want a garden, you have to let parts of it be wild and grow as they will in divine intelligence.
So
that's how it is for man.
For man and for all life, ultimately.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, similar to this, Leadbeater with Annie Besant, he was receiving in trance information, the periodic table of elements. He was able to diagram what those were, and later on those were verified. So this is a time where people were really moving in a trance, receiving higher information that they couldn't have even guessed about.
Right.
And so what I love about learning about the folks from the past is that if they did it, we can do it too.
Right. And certainly this is what Davis thought his and felt his mission was, is to provide roadmaps for people to do this.
Yes.
You know, and I think he did an incredible job with it. This is something that a lot of people don't know, even people involved in spiritualism. Shortly after the publication of that first book, he had a personal crisis, and that was that he was really upset that all this good stuff was happening and he wasn't there for it. And I can certainly understand that. And so, you know, he had it out with his guides. One of his guides, by the way, was Swedenborg.
Yeah, Emanuel Swedenborg.
Swedenborg,
the Swedish scientist.
Yes. You know, who is considered one of the one of the early sort of stepping stones for the development of modern spiritualism.
You know, he was someone who was very well respected.
Yes.
Internationally, even.
Yeah.
As a scientist first, and when he was age 55, he started to have spirit contact and spirit experiences, and he wrote at length about them, about what the spirit world was like, how the hierarchy of that all happened. So
yes, the first book called Heaven and Hell, and his experiences with that. And then he went on to write almost a volume. There's a few books that he didn't. A volume for every book of the Bible, giving its metaphysical interpretation.
This
was Swedenborg.
Interpretation of that from a scientific mind.
Right, scientific mind. Yeah, and some consider him to be one of the greatest intelligences to ever live. You know, right up there. You know, with with an Einstein or a Newton and all of those. Yeah. Right. Well, he was fluent in 11 different languages.
Yes.
Right. He developed a couple of fields of mathematics. Mineralogist.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something else that he did. There was some art or craft that he had developed too that he was
able to do. I can't remember what it is
either. A skill that he had also on top of everything else.
Well, when people are in that creative, inventive space, it's incredible what it encourages in them.
And a member of Swedish Parliament.
And he did a lot politically as well.
So he was certainly an active soul. But here's an interesting thing that happened to him. When he was 56, he had very bad teeth. His mouth, they were all sort of rotten. And he grew an entire new set of teeth.
What?
Yeah.
How?
No one knows. Yeah.
Poor George Washington was stuck with his dentures. And there's Manuel Swedenborg.
Yeah.
Growing them back.
No one knows how or why, but that's, maybe that was a blessing or a gift he was given for changing direction in his life.
I had not heard that one.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's Swedenborg.
I'm sure there are people who would like to know that method.
Yeah. So anyway, Swedenborg, one of his guides, they convinced him that he needed to read and write, learn how to read and write, and they supported him, So he had help from people in the physical plane, but also simultaneously, they were helping him to learn how to read and write.
They're like, let's progress this guy now.
Yeah. Right. And so within a short time, it was no longer necessary for him to be put into a trance state by another person, that he could access those states at will.
Well, eventually he probably learned what it felt mind, body, spirit to align himself for that purpose.
Right.
And was able to vibrationally maintain that at will.
That's right.
Yeah. So I think that's probably how that happened.
And another reason I believe that happened too is there's a famous story, and this is about his it's also the title of his autobiography, The Magic Staff, and what the Magic Staff refers to is just a simple phrase, And so it was a difficult time in his life, and his spirit guides came to him, and they flashed before him kind of in blazing letters this phrase, under all circumstances, keep an even mind. When you read about it in his autobiography, you get the sense that this wasn't just reading something. It was affecting his entire consciousness. So it wasn't just, when you read about it, you get the sense, okay, he just read this thing, this message in the sky or something.
Right.
Well, no, there's something that happened for him simultaneously, internally. So it was like the essence of the message was implanted in him.
Yes.
Okay. Now, but I believe it was kind of already there in a lot of ways.
I think it's in all of us.
Right. But when you look back at his history and you see some things that occurred in his childhood even.
And he had to keep an even mind.
He did a lot in his life, but this sort of like stamped it permanently. It was like, no, okay, yeah. So let me give you an example. This is in childhood, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, I'll just go through this first.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he's about 11 or 12, and a friend of his lends him a horse. He goes into the neighboring town, goes into the general store to pick something up.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's coming out, there's a group of young Tufts there, and they see this is a kid from out of town.
Yep.
We're gonna mess with him.
Mm-hmm.
So they start messing with him, push him around, and the biggest of the bullies starts really shoving him, knocks him to the ground, and starts pummeling him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as he's being beaten up by this kid, he gets this internal message: show no anger.
Mm.
And somehow he was able to kind of just hold it all in, not be the slightest bit angry over what was going on. He said, it certainly hurt, but he gave me tears, and I cried. He said, but almost instantly, the boy who was beating him stopped. And he got up and dusted himself off, tears and all, and got on his horse and went back. Well, shortly after that, within a month or two, his family moved into that town. He found himself in the same general store, and there was the kid that
and
beat him up.
That.
He didn't even recognize Davis. Davis recognized him.
Yes.
And they started a conversation and became friends.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, within a couple of months, they're sitting by a stream bed, and they're just communicating, talking with each other. And the boy says to him, you know, something happened to me, and he says, I have to confess something, and it's been bothering me ever since. This kid came into town, and I just jumped in, and I started beating him. And he says, you know, Davis says, don't worry, that was me.
And forgiveness and grace.
Yeah, and great, yeah.
That spiritual, that natural law of grace.
And they had become friends. But I think it's one of those turn the other cheek stories.
Yes, yes.
But the interesting part about this turn the other cheek is how it affected the consciousness of the bully.
Yes, because he wasn't in a space of having to resist or...
Exactly. There was nothing to, push back.
Nothing to push back on, that. And I think that's something that, throughout time, that's a universal message, that idea of keeping an even mind. Because I've noticed that the more you have an aggressive emotional response of something, it cements that karmic entanglement further.
Absolutely.
And actually snarls it up more. Mm. Not that you can't have opinions, not that you can't have emotions, but we have to watch our moods and modes.
Yeah. And also, to me, this part speaks to the bigger issue of what Davis was trying to present to the public. And that developing your spiritual gifts is wonderful and good, but the psychic aspect of that and so on and so forth. But the real cherry on the top is moral courage and strength.
Yeah.
And every great spiritual leader, you see that evidenced in their lives, from Jesus to the Buddha to all of
the different saints.
Right. And there was a great moral strength at their core.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often asked myself about this. It's like, why Davis having a gift as unique as he had. And I've done a lot of study on mystics on.
Tom is a healer.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you do professionally,
mm-hmm.
and teach healing, too.
Yeah. So studying various mystics throughout history, and it was difficult to find, examples that even measure up to Davis,
mm-hmm.
In all of history, in terms of the breadth of what he was able to do. And he wrote something like 26, 28 books in his lifetime. Most of them about 500 pages long or longer.
Mm-hmm. That's from a former illiterate.
Yes. Yeah.
It just goes to show you that when you want to be a sponge to that which is of the divine, things can progress rapidly.
Yeah.
And not instant mashed potatoes, but the idea of it's going to take some time, but you can get there and get to an understanding of spiritual underpinnings, the spiritual principles.
Principles,
as you said.
Oh,
I want to take a caller.
Absolutely.
Let's see. This would be caller ending in 2911. Again, 2911. And welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call. Hi.
Yes. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Terry, and I'm calling from Rhode Island.
Terry from Rhode Island. And what's your question about today?
Well, I was tuning in. You know, I've gone through a transformative couple of years myself due to loss and rebuilding, sort of just navigating life. And it thrust upon me a spiritual awakening of sorts. So I'm interested in the topic, and I do believe in the regeneration and how, you know, it can be applied in life. It's just trying to stay grounded, I think, is the biggest challenge for me, especially when there are others around you who, you know, you're not trying to impose your beliefs upon them, but also can kind of see differently now, like the inner self versus the outer self and where the motivations are coming from. So any thoughts that you may have on that, on how to stay, how one could stay grounded, you know, when surrounded by others who may not be maybe on the same rung of the spiritual ladder of life?
You know what? I think, do you have a meditation practice, Karen?
I did. Like I said, I've deviated off course, sort of, you know, I'm just trying to get myself realigned at this point.
No, good, good. Well, I think that's probably one of the most important things you can do, is to continue that. And as you do, I think you'll find that it's just going to get deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much one learns from a meditation practice. And Davis... you're talking about how this may fit into Davis.
Yeah.
He spent a lot of time going into deeper states of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his anchor. That
mm-hmm.
enabled him to stay centered. And he faced enormous challenges in his life.
Very much so. And, you know, with this, you know, the moving into other consciousness, it's interesting when I'm doing my mediumship work, all things kind of go to the wayside. It's just me and the client and spirit and in that bubble, and everything else drops away. And so it is when you truly enter into that communion with the divine, with your own soul, other things don't take as much precedence, and people can't pull you off kilter so much during that
mm-hmm.
time. Even if you're more sensitive from one perspective,
right.
It helps to help other people and to be grounded in those ways for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And he, in Davis's time, he faced all kinds of criticism, you know, because he was attacking spiritual convention.
Mm-hmm.
that's not easy to do at any time. But let me just read you an interesting paragraph from his autobiography, and it relates to the subject that you brought up here, Terry. Prejudice
okay.
is as idiotic and merciless as erroneous. Of this, my private history is a demonstration. Minds too blunted to feel a truth and too indolent to examine a principle are the first to cry mad dog and shout infidel. Hoots, hisses, and silly exclamations reached my outer ear almost every day. Sunday school boys would chalk vulgar words upon our cottage fence and gateposts. Students of Cicero, Xenophon, Locke, Bacon, and Divinity would echo in public the ridicule which salary professors oftentimes whispered in private. And young ladies, too not overstocked with the charity which thinketh no evil, but imbibing in prejudice of preceptus or minister or parents, all equally misinformed, would nervously ejaculate cunning little epithets and harmless satires with which they sought to check the progress of our movement. What was all this to me? Amusement and nothing more. In the blue sky, we had friends stable as the everlasting mountains.
Yeah. You know, you do move into a place of God divine holding you and protecting you.
Yes.
When you go through difficulties. And that helps you to be grounded. I think it's good to surround yourself with spiritual food, good books that attune
mm-hmm.
those inner forces.
And so there in Rhode Island, Terry, do you have a community, a spiritual community, or at least a group of friends that you can connect with?
I do, yep. There's the spiritualist church here, and I've
just
found a group.
Good, good.
Just sort of
I find all of that also very, very supportive and reinforcing.
And inspiring.
Inspiring.
Too. Well, thank you for calling in today. We really appreciate you calling.
Thanks.
And
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, you know, I think it's as much as Andrew Jackson Davis in our day and time has a lot of highfalutin words for some folks.
Right.
there's a beauty to the cadence of all of that.
Yes.
And I think that having those kinds of words infiltrate into our consciousness helps,
yeah,
too.
They tended to be a little more flowery in the 19th
yeah,
century.
Than what
anyway,
we're used to.
They
knew more words, it would seem.
I think so.
But you know, the gist of that is beautiful.
Yeah.
I appreciate you sharing about that.
Yeah.
Time is going so fast. Let's take one more caller, and then we should talk about some super consciousness and Edgar Cayce if we have a chance.
Yeah.
I'm
going
to take caller number 2158. Again, 2158.
Hi.
Hi. What's your name and where are you calling from? Could you
my
say that again,
Lori, please? I'm calling from State College, Pennsylvania. And
did you say Lori?
Dolores.
Dolores.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
No.
And
what's your
okay. I saw my holistic practitioner yesterday, and she said that I've been having muscular issues. This is really weird, like on the left side in the front area, and I mean, it can get painful. And she said she was muscle testing and she was getting a positive for a parasite. And so she had me taking some deathly disgusting thing called BOTANIGUFUGE. I have no idea. But anyways, the get off is killing me. And I was wondering if you knew of something else I could do to get rid of this or if you know anything that I need to do to help this go away.
Well,
it's kind of off the topic.
Yeah. We are talking about Andrew Jackson Davis, and he did have the ability to diagnose and prescribe and do things like that, but that's not what we can offer on the show, Dolores. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And, I don't think that... See, we focus more on spiritual healing and the...
Mm-hmm.
Is prayerful and purposeful on that. We don't do medical diagnosis. I apologize.
No, I understand that. No, that's fine. I just didn't know if there was something else I could combine with what my holistic practitioner had said to do to help with the die-off and get rid of it. But spiritually, what can I do to help this move besides meditation? Because I do tons of that.
Well, there are often some very, very... I believe some of the simplest visualizations that you can do to invite in healing energy.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
If you just begin to imagine that the infinite healing light and love of God is coming into you from all directions as you're breathing. So like if you breathe on every in-breath, you're letting in more and more light and energy. And it can be targeted to the areas of your body where the condition is worst.
Absolutely.
You know, where you feel the condition.
Mm-hmm.
And the other piece is just being open to that being altered in whatever way necessary. So sometimes as you're breathing in that light and energy, you may feel the color change, or you may feel a frequency or a sound vibration coming in to support your health and your condition, or a temperature difference,
yeah.
Exactly. All of those kinds of things. Very, very. It's a very simple, but often a very powerful way of engaging in your meditation and opening up to the healing presence of the divine.
And it offers a good reset for your body, mind, and soul too.
Yes.
So you know, meditation is, but visualization, as Tom said, is an excellent tool as well. So I hope you apply that, Dolores.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, bye. You're welcome. Welcome. Have a wonderful day, and thanks for calling in today.
Okay, bye-bye.
And so, you know, healing is something that we all, at some point in our lives or throughout our lives, we have different instances that we're calling upon the divine to help us. And sometimes we need someone to witness our healing.
Yes, and I find that to be, talk about amplification. Witnessing is a tremendous amplification of healing.
Yeah.
And sometimes I believe that's all you do. A spiritual healer, and I teach this in my classes too, I said, you know, you don't do anything but witness.
Yeah.
That's all we do. We watch what it is that the divine and the higher self of whoever it is we're working with mm-hmm. wants to manifest for them.
Right.
And the better watcher you are,
mm-hmm.
the more likely the manifestation is to happen.
Yeah. The more you put that gentle request out and accept it. Healing is
yeah.
about what we allow. And allowing and trusting that those things are moving
yeah.
forward and what we can learn through our healing process, because
mm-hmm.
it's not about the destination, it's about the journey, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I think we should mention real quickly the correlation with Edgar Cayce, because he is also someone who's went
right.
into trance, did medical intuition similar to mm-hmm. what Andrew Jackson Davis offered.
Right.
And why don't you tell them briefly, we just have a few minutes left.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
Literally, it goes by so fast.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, most people in the 20th century know about Edgar Cayce, at least in the second half of the 20th
He's
century.
He's considered the sleeping prophet.
The sleeping
so
prophet.
So we have Andrew
right.
Jackson Davis, who's the Poughkeepsie seer, and then we
yeah.
have the sleeping prophet.
The sleeping prophet.
Edgar Cayce.
And Edgar Cayce, almost exactly the same kind of early history, only what Cayce never did was he never just took the jump into doing the superior condition.
Right.
If we have time, I can get into that.
I know.
But, For 20, 30 years, what the good thing that they did around Cayce's work was he had a secretary that
recorded everything.
That recorded everything and wrote down every session and everything that was prescribed and diagnosed, including many, many things that dealt with people's past lives
mm-hmm.
and their emotional, psychological history
right.
as they related to past lives. So we get a lot of information from Cayce on Atlantis and Lemuria and some of these
things like
these
that. And
sort
he did make predictions
yeah.
as well.
And he did make some predictions as well.
And there are
yeah.
some wonderful books on Edgar Cayce. I think it's important to mention that Edgar Cayce, what's that called? ARE,
Association for Research and Enlightenment.
That's where they have a lot of Andrew Jackson Davis's.
Yeah, his effects from his family and stuff that they managed to get them there. I think they have his cane. They have some other things.
And
his
that's
personal
in
effects.
Virginia Beach area, isn't it?
It's in Virginia Beach. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
if anybody's interested more about Andrew Jackson Davis, you can certainly take a look at Andrew Jackson Davis's books. But if you happen to go through the...
Right, and we have a wonderful, here in Lilydale, we have a wonderful Andrew Jackson Davis collection in our library.
Mm-hmm.
But,
here in Skidmore Library here in
yeah,
Lilydale. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but anybody who's really, really curious and interested in this, a couple of things. Certainly, his autobiography is a good start, and that's called The Magic Staff.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend that. The other book that I highly recommend for those who really want to get an in-depth understanding of the mind and the levels of the mind, levels of perception, understanding how perception is the backbone of spiritual growth and development. It's the third philosophy.
90 seconds.
Yeah.
And harmonial philosophy is something that Andrew Jackson Davis kind of founded, if you
right.
will.
Mm-hmm.
He did have some time as spiritualism, but he also did the harmonial philosophy. And he is responsible for helping spiritualism to have a Sunday school program.
That's
too,
right.
called the Lyceum.
The Lyceum
for
program.
Those of you here in Lilydale, you know the Lyceum is at the Children's Acre, our playground area. And it says Andrew Jackson Davis.
Yeah.
So those are all tidbits. We just have 60 seconds. I want to mention, and Tom has a website, tomcratsley.com,
mm-hmm.
and he has a guest house that he runs here.
Yeah.
And his wife, Ellie, is a registered medium. So
yes.
he's a long time here in Lilydale, knows a lot about healing. I know you've got healing classes probably coming up.
Oh, yes, yes. I do a healing mastery class
mm-hmm.
every summer for Lilydale.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also involved in the School of Healing and Prophecy here.
Mm-hmm.
We train spiritualist ministers.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's a Fellowships of the Spirit. That's, yeah. Yeah. There's not much time to
I know,
to,
there's not much time,
but, all of it,
but take a look at
yeah.
Tom Cratsley's website, tomcratsley.com.
Yeah.
And I hope that you all enjoyed. Well, Davis, thank you for tuning in today. And we really appreciate you. We'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.